This episode of Harvey Brownstone Interviews is brought to you by the Harvey Brownstone Talk Show Blend Coffee, available at HollywoodBlends.com. Everyone's saying it's the best coffee they've ever tasted. Why not give it a try and see for yourself?
Hello, everyone. I'm Harvey Brownstone, and today's special guest is a highly popular and beloved multi-award-winning actress, singer, dancer, recording artist, producer, and director who's conquered every medium in the world of entertainment. She's appeared on Broadway in six shows, including How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, Bravo Giovanni, Seesaw, for which she won a Drama Desk Award, an Outer Critics Award, and a Tony Award nomination, and of course, The Tale of the Allergist's Wife, for which she received another Tony Award nomination. She also starred as Mame at the Hollywood Bowl alongside Christine Ebersole and Benjamin Platt. And most recently, she played Madame Morrible on Broadway in Wicked. And on the big screen, our guest has appeared in a number of great movies, including How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, The Love Bug, The Comic, and Along Came Polly. And on television, our guest has been immortalized for her portrayal of the resilient and compassionate Karen McKenzie on the blockbuster TV series Knots Landing, for which she received an Emmy Award nomination, and she won five Soap Opera Digest Awards, as well as the 2009 TV Land Anniversary Award. But beyond that iconic role, our guest has appeared in many classic TV shows, including Ben Casey, The Red Skelton Show, The Carol Burnett Show, Marcus Welby, Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In, Will and Grace, and many more. And she starred in dozens of TV movies and miniseries, including Only with Married Men, Dark Victory, A Letter to Three Wives, The Fatal Image, A Murder on Shadow Mountain, and Scandalous Me, the Jacqueline Suzanne story, which she also executive produced. And let's not forget the 1997 miniseries, Knots Landing, Back to the Cul-de-Sac, and the 2005 TV movie, Knots Landing Reunion, Together Again. In 1996, our guest became the first woman ever to produce, direct, co-write, and star in a TV movie, Color Me Perfect, for which she was honored with the prestigious Christopher Award, which recognizes artistic works that affirm the highest values of the human spirit. She's also a recipient of the Gracie Allen Award presented by the Alliance for Women in Media Foundation. And in 1998, she received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And now our guest is starring in a brand new podcast along with her pals from Knots Landing, Joan Van Ark and Donna Mills, called We're Not Done Yet. I'm delighted and deeply honored to welcome the incomparable Michelle Lee to our show. Michelle, thank you so much for being here.
I'm so happy, and I'm incomparable.
You are incomparable. You're a legend. And, you know, when I get to interview a star like yourself, who's had the incredible longevity and such a diverse career as you've had, it's quite a challenge to encapsulate all of the highlights that you've had. I mean, I didn't even mention your two albums, A Taste of the Fantastic Michelle Lee, and Michelle Lee Sings, L. David Sloan, and your career as a concert and nightclub performer. I mean, Michelle, you've really done it all.
I have. I've been known to do it all. That's how I got Knots Landing.
Well, you spent 14 years of your life on Knots Landing. I understand that many people think of Knots Landing when they hear your name, but I've been a fan of yours from the very beginning, and I'd love to ask you about some of the other things you've done. I hope that's okay.
Yes, it's okay. Bring it on.
I mentioned your Broadway career in my introduction, and I had the privilege of seeing you in The Tale of the Allergist's Wife, written by the phenomenal Charles Bush, who appeared on our show last year. What was it like working with Linda Lavin?
Oh, my gosh. This woman, she is, well, I don't have to tell our audience. I mean, they loved her so much because of everything she did. She's a brilliant actress. Beyond brilliant, she was. And she was tough. As people know, I am tough. It's like sometimes you bring tough with you, and that's good, I believe, because you're, as long as you don't kill people around you, it's the director in me, actually. You're used to kind of fighting to get up there as a female. And she's tough because she knew what she wanted. And That's all I could say. There was no one better than her, except for Joan Van Ark on Knots Landing. Ah,
But you're tough as a person, but on screen, you convey enormous warmth, and you convey vulnerability. You're incredibly likable. You must be able to turn on and off the toughness.
yes, that's true, because I'm not tough all the time. I think I became tough because of things that have happened psychologically. I don't mean in any real detrimental way, but psychologically, from the time I was child on, I was very close with my parents, probably too close, never really maybe felt omnipotence, and so a struggle sometimes to understand me and allow me to be out there. I have to be tough sometimes, or seem tough. There's a part of me that is very vulnerable, hence the tough. Think about that, folks.
I think the word resilient describes you more than tough.
Yeah, let's not talk about tough.
In 1969, you worked with Dick Van Dyke and Mickey Rooney in the comic directed by Carl Reiner. That's three legends in one project. That must have been so exciting for you.
Yeah, it was, I stayed close with Dick Van Dyke to this very day. We're very close. I did so many things with him other than that movie. And when I did the movie with him, he's as resilient, happy, up, wonderful as he is. Okay, he's very private, very private. When I did the movie with him, he was pretty much on his own, quiet. We got along. Subsequent to that, we did so many things together. I worked with him often on some specials. We've seen each other socially a lot. He's been here to my house, I've been to his home. And I don't have to tell the audience what kind of a man he is. And I will tell you now, when people talk about who he is today at age up there, okay? People, he shines, and he is so in love with his wife, Arlene. When I first heard they were together, I thought, oh my goodness, there's such an age difference. And there is an age difference. They are so in love and so supportive that, I mean, if you thought it, nah, it didn't matter at all. So I love the man. I love his wife. And Mickey Rooney was crazy. We all knew that. Doing this with Mickey Rooney was, I don't even know what, we're not chaotic, maybe chaotic.
Sounds like an adventure.
Oh my God. It was an adventure because Mickey Rooney never stopped. He was always on. It's kind of the opposite of the tough thing. He had to be always on because that's the way he stays alive, or he's dead. And in his own mind's eye, the superstar that he was since he was a kid, Carl Reiner, one of the finest, most wonderful human beings. Again, I have to say that too. Everybody loved Carl Reiner, especially Mel Brooks. And the friendship.
That's for sure. And what about Carol Burnett? You were on her show four times. Do you remember the skits that you did with her?
Yes, I do remember some of the skits I did. She was so lovely to me. And every time I see her now, wherever it may be, she always comes and gives me a big hug. I mean, the audience knows Carol Burnett as they know Dick Van Dyke. And you can't get away from that. I did one sketch with her, which was kind of funny. It was a sketch that I had to come out in a bikini in the middle of the scene. And so the wardrobe people were saying to me, "Ooh, I don't know." I said, "No, I guess I can lose weight. I can lose weight. They didn't say I was fat. The mini they had for me was just a little too tight." So I said, "I'm going to be 5 pounds less by the time we shoot in 4 days. 5 pounds less." So I did, and oh, It was being shot live straight through. So I kept going in and out of a closet and changing what I was wearing to woo Harvey Korman in the scene. So I get back there. I'm supposed to be out in like 30 seconds or less. And I get in there and my bikini. Is that a break? My bikini. So
Was it the top or the bottom
yes,
that broke?
it was the top, okay?
You didn't lose weight there.
I couldn't lose weight there. So anyway, I came out. This is gonna sound funny to the audience who knows show business. I came out of the closet late. I did. And so they had to wait for a minute and you know, of course, they don't like doing that because they have to pause everything. The flow is interrupted. I interrupted the flow because of my bust.
Well, if there's a reason to interrupt the flow, that's definitely the best one. I also want to ask you, in 1985, you co-starred in the remake of A Letter to Three Wives, and you played Rita Phipps, who was originally played by Anne Southern in the 1949 movie. Were you influenced at all by her performance?
No, I couldn't be. Too much time had gone by where things had changed so much, but I did work with her once. She was in the movie a little bit. Did you know that? She played a character in the movie. The executive producer of Knots Landing, Michael Fileman, put her in that movie with Stephanie Zimbalist and Lonnie Anderson. You see the similarity?
Absolutely.
And big busts. We're full of it. June is busted all over. No.
Well, I had forgotten that Anne Southern played a part in your movie. That's so cool.
Yeah, absolutely. She did. She played someone's mother.
Another one you did in 1992, Broadway Bound, which was based on Neil Simon's play. You co-starred with Anne Bancroft, Hume Cronyn, Jerry Orbach, and my friend Jonathan Silverman, who was recently on our show. Did you ever get to meet Neil Simon?
Yes, I met, oh yes, because when I did this Broadway show called Seesaw, he wrote some of the comedy in the show when we came, when we opened and we were in previews. And he did a little, you know, they called him Doc for a reason. And he wrote a couple of the scenes that were hysterical. Oh, they were so funny. Now, Jonathan, and then I knew all of them. My parents were New Yorkers, and I knew everybody. I was of a generation where everybody knew everybody. And you're gonna love this about Jonathan Silverman. Guess what? He was my next door neighbor in the house I lived in before this house. And his mother and he lived there. My son grew up there. And so, yes, I've known him probably all his life.
Oh, he's a great guy. I just love that you've done these TV productions of Broadway shows. I mentioned Broadway Bound. You also did Of Thee I Sing with Carol O'Connor, Cloris Leachman, Jim Backus. That must have been a great experience.
Oh yeah, I'll tell you what happened then. I was known enough to be on many television specials, and Carol O'Connor didn't really know me, but he saw me on one of the Kraft music halls, and I was singing Bob Hope's Thanks for the Memories as a ballad. And I always act my songs. My songs become my character. And he was so in love with what I did with that. He put me on their special, and I played a character called, I don't know. She was, I don't know, but she was voluptuous. And she talked like this, and she was from the South or Texas, and she wooed all the men there. But enough about me. How about when I played Karen McKenzie?
Wow, Karen McKenzie is, of course, a legendary character for sure. But another legendary character, 1998, you play Jacqueline Suzanne in a terrific TV movie, Scandalous Me, the Jacqueline Suzanne story. How did you prepare for that role to play a real person?
Well, very interesting. I met with her stepdaughter, and who was really involved with everything after her father and Jacqueline Suzanne had passed away. And she gave me so much information. She was so wonderful. She read things to me. She let me see things. I had the ankh that Jacqueline Suzanne always wore, and which I wore. I wore a couple of her things in the movie. And Jacqueline Suzanne today, what she brought to publishing and how she sold what she had to do was a woman who was tough. That was a woman who grabbed everything she could when she could and made it happen for herself. So her daughter was wonderful with me. Yeah, that was a movie that I produced also.
That was such a fabulous movie. I love it when you played real people. You did it again with Big Dreams and Broken Hearts, the Dottie West story. Did you ever get to meet Dottie West?
I did meet Dottie West once backstage. I was backstage, right? It was at a Circus of the Stars. Remember those shows? And she was walking backstage with her then husband, who was her youngest husband, her drummer, Byron. And I met her for the first time then. After she passed away, I knew Ken Cragen, who was her manager, and Kenny Rogers. He was his manager, and I had met Kenny many different times. So anyway, I got in cahoots with Ken Cragen, and I got the rights of Dottie West. I worked with his daughter Shelley West, and she gave me so much information, and I got loads of writings of Dottie West. But the reason it was so incredible, not only just this woman who changed everything in country music, she wore Bob Mackie. She just smashed through everything. She had hits with Kenny Rogers. Well, I wore, believe it or not, they opened the storage from the costume designer, and most of the clothes I wore in Dottie West were hers. And all I had to do was make things at times a little bigger, believe it or not, because she had gotten very thin at a point of time. But she was legendary in all the people that she helped, all the country artists that she would have them live in her basement, in her home, whatever, and she'd help them through everything. But Dottie West, I love also. It was nominated for two Emmy Awards. And I also produced that movie. And it's one of my very favorite things I ever did because everybody loved it. They still ask about it and they still want it.
Oh, it's a tremendous movie. And you acquired a whole new audience of country music fans because of your portrayal, which was filled with so much love for her. You could tell that you really liked her.
I did. And also, by the way, this was a movie I recorded everything she sang in Nashville with her singers.
That particular movie was one of the best television biopics we've ever had.
Oh my gosh. I thank you for that.
And another one, I don't know if you remember this, you played Lou Costello's wife, Anne, in a TV movie called Bud and Lou with Harvey Korman and Buddy Hackett. How did you prepare for that role? Was there any footage of her that you could look at?
No, and I don't think that was really important at that time. I think in terms of her, Bud and Lou had to be Bud and Lou to some degree, but the wife, didn't have to go that far. She could have the same color hair. And I knew her psychology. I knew what she went through because they had a child that drowned in their backyard pool. And she was never the same, nor her husband ever the same. Well, I mean, you could just imagine that. Period. Nothing else. Being married to a star, going through the, excuse me, the death of a child. That's it.
Yeah, that was a very, very tough life that she had. I want to tell you, Michelle, one of the reasons I've admired you so much over the years is that you've starred in a number of TV movies about very important social issues. I don't know, even know if you realize it. There was When No One Would Listen, which was about domestic violence. My Son Johnny was about bullying. Color Me Perfect, which you produced, directed, co-wrote, and starred in, was about a woman with intellectual disabilities. I want to commend you publicly, Michelle, for your involvement in these projects that convey very important messages about social justice, these issues that don't get anywhere near enough attention.
Never anymore, very little, less and less. And I believe we're kind of suffering for it. There's so much today, a sense of separation and things that people want in life. And it's cost us a lot. And you're right, I did try with the movies I produced. And by the way, I produced all three of those. I did try to do things that were a little different, always. And it wasn't about being a success or failure. Obviously, I wanted success, but I always tried to do something different. I had to do something different each time, whether it was well accepted or not. And I thank you for mentioning that because it's so very important to me.
Well, in particular, I have to tell you, I don't want to get all verklempt here, but My Son Johnny really hit home to me and my generation of young gay men that got bullied so badly when we were young. And this is the first movie, to my knowledge, that deals with bullying.
Yes.
And I got to show it to my mom and said, I want you to be like Michelle.
Oh my gosh. That
I
is so.
want you to be as tough as Michelle.
Oh gosh. Yeah, I thank you for that. And Ricky Schroeder. Unbelievable. I knew Ricky Schroeder, who became Rick Schroeder. I knew since he was this big. You can't see how big he was, but he's under my desk. And Franco Zeffirelli, who was a good friend of my then husband, and my, he, oh gosh, Franco Zeffirelli put this kid in the movie The Champ. And so I knew him. Franco Zeffirelli was living like half a block away, and Ricky Schroeder was over the house all the time. A couple of years later, he becomes Rick. So we knew each other for so long. Now, talk about acting. You watch him in that movie. Oh, my goodness. Unbelievable talent.
Yeah, and a terrific movie. And I want to mention also, Michelle, I know you're too humble to do it, so I'm going to say it. In the early 80s, you co-founded the Entertainment Industries Council to encourage the entertainment industry to focus on health and social issues. What inspired you to create that organization?
Well, I didn't create it. I was on the board when it first started. So, yeah, I mean, I can't say I created it. I joined it at the very beginning because we were having at that time, we were always talking about drugs and the problem with drugs. And the EIC, the Entertainment Industries Council, was at that time all about the dangers of drugs and how to avoid, okay? As we grew and time went by, it became all health issues. And again, with what's going on today in our world, with health doing a topsy-turvy and, the measles and all kinds of things that we have going on now, we need to really keep all the scientists and people we need in all health departments and keep it wide open so that we can discover why so many issues are not going well for us now, health-wise, and how we can improve it by using science.
And what you've done in the world of entertainment to sensitize the public to these issues through compelling entertainment, you're actually educating people at the same time as entertaining them and comforting them. It's a very, very great gift you have as a producer to bring these things to light. And you're also a very gifted director. I mean, you directed Color Me Perfect, you directed 9 episodes of Knots Landing. What was it like directing your fellow castmates?
Sometimes very scary.
Were they nice to
Let me
you?
say. Yeah, well, you know what? I got, yeah, they always seem to be. Okay, I don't know what happened behind the scenes because it's difficult. You know, men at that time, also the crew, there weren't many female directors. And I know at that time, men were a little, mommy is going to direct us now because it was a female telling them what to do and where to go. I love directing. I had directed other things before Knots Landing. I directed a couple of things. I directed in San Francisco 2 musicals and in New York 2 town halls and probably other things I'm not thinking about, but I was meant to be a director, honestly. What I see in terms of the picture of the puzzle, as a director must see, I saw as an actor, and many directors on Knots Landing would say, Michelle, you should be directing. So I loved it. I gave, you know, I always do this. My father was called a jack of all trades. He did everything. He was a makeup artist, but he also wrote music and he sculpted and he made up little plays and stories for his children, me and my brother Ken. And so he did everything. So I thought, okay, I'll be a Jacqueline of all trades. He was a jack of all trades. So I really have worn many hats. And then sometimes I leave them too soon. It's like, okay, done that. Okay, what's next? Done that.
But inside, you really love directing.
Yes.
And I think that also comes from being tough. You can be in charge.
Yes.
You know,
As a
you're a team player. You take direction very well. Heaven only knows how many directors you've worked with, but you can be in charge and you know exactly what vision you want to execute on that screen.
right. The problem, or always a problem for all directors, is how to direct each actor. There's so many different problems that can arise if you direct them in ways that is not good for them. Particularly, you have to know your audience. So, if you're tough, there's ways of doing tough. Instead of saying, you go over there, you say, this is a for instance, you say, you know what I'd love you to do for me? If you can somehow find a way to end up over there, could you try that for me?
And it works.
Yeah, I learned a lot more after Knots Landing.
Now you're doing this podcast with Joan and Donna. We're not done yet. Are you having fun?
Oh, we're having so much fun. You know, people, the people, you know, they probably wonder why the H we were doing this. First of all, we became closer after Knots Landing, if you can believe it. The three of us got together often. And we were, as Joan loves to say, and I second it, girlfriends. I don't have to say, oh, we're old lady friends. I could say, girlfriends, we're
I think
girlfriends.
you're sisters.
Yeah, sisters, right. Not sisters, sisters. And we have fun together. So everybody was saying, when are you going to do something together? People had been asking us to do interview shows, meaning we would go somewhere and audiences would ask us questions. And of course, we'd be very brilliant at that. And so what happened, people kept saying, why don't you do something else? We want you. We tried to get something going through other people that never really fit us well. This was perfect. And people are loving it. We've done 6, I think 4 of them have already been seen, shown, heard,
Yeah, they've
whatever.
been released.
It's been released and it's everywhere, isn't it?
It's everywhere. It's on every platform. I have to tell you, Donna was on our show a few weeks ago, and she said that people sometimes ask her about episodes or scenes that she can barely remember. So she has to go back and watch some of them. Now, Michelle, you're the only cast member who's been on all 344 episodes. So do you have trouble remembering things that the fans ask you about?
Yes, absolutely. As a matter of fact, someone sent me a scene that I did in Knots Landing with Stephen Mott, and he played my brother. When I tell you I was watching it yesterday, laughing at me. I was so funny. I mean, really, the incredible thing that Karen had, certainly in all of the beginnings of Knots Landing, with her husband and Kevin Dobson, who I loved so much, Don Murray before him, unbelievable actor. We just laughed all the time because a lot of the stuff we did was romantic comedy. We just brought my character was so much more character Karen in the beginning of the show through X amount of years. Oh my gosh, I wish I could go back to that again.
Well, it's always there for the world to see. I mean, you've been immortalized. But when you talk about being funny, I have to tell you personally, you appeared on an episode of Will and Grace with Cheetah Rivera. It was called Dance Cards and Greeting Cards. I thought you were so funny. That was such a great episode. You must have had a ball.
Yeah, we did. Of course, that talk about the characters on that show, the brilliant actors, all of them, brilliant actors. And I don't have to tell you anything really about Cheetah, who was everybody's, oh God, they just looked up to this woman for everything she had done. And she was Miss Broadway, and they loved her. And so when they asked me to do it with her, I Gosh. And I knew her forever. Also, I knew her daughter. It's everything comes around, goes around, comes around. So Cheetah and I had seen each other so often in New York. And I love doing that show. The show was fabulous, still is. When they rebooted it was great.
It was great. That was a great episode. You talk about New York. I have to tell you that in 2010, I saw you at Carnegie Hall with Michael Feinstein. That was such an unforgettable evening, Michelle. It's such a thrill to tell you that, how great that show was.
Yes, what we did at one point at Carnegie Hall, we actually, there were other actor performers on the show also, but Michael and I sang for the then president, who I love so much, President Clinton. And that was a joy. That was a joy. So anyway, we're all leaving. It's raining outside. He always came or left a little late. You know, he wasn't like Ronald Reagan did everything on time to the minute. Clinton would just kind of lag behind. And so they told me that because the president was leaving through this exit door, that they were clearing our cars. And I said, I can't go outside. What I was wearing will get damaged by rain. So they said, okay, wait, wait in the hallway. And so he came by and he did a double take. I was the only one standing there and he said, can I take you out? And I thought, what is he asking me? Oh my God. He said, can I take you out? And then he said, I mean, we have umbrellas. It's raining outside. Can I take you out?
You know, these stories, I'm just sitting here thinking, you should write a memoir, Michelle. I mean, look at the life you've had.
I have a lot of stories, especially Washington and presidents, loads of stories, because I was on the artist committee of the Kennedy Center Honors, and I was always at the White House. Pardon me, puff, puff, as Joan Rivers would say. I was always at that White House.
So, how about it? Do you think you will write a memoir?
I think so. I'm kind of writing it right now, but I won't call it a memoir because I don't like the sound of that. It's like, I said to my brother, who knows me? I'm gonna write about me. Why in the world would they buy about me? Well, I've
Oh, I
thought
can give you 100 reasons.
only
I
a
mean,
hundred
when you
rounds.
think, I'll tell you, one of the most fascinating things about your career for me is that you've participated in some of the most memorable tributes for the greatest legendary star. I actually did some research on this. You've performed on shows, just listen to this: Frank Sinatra, Gene Kelly, Lucille Ball, Carol Burnett, Stephen Sondheim, President Reagan, George Burns, Clint Eastwood, Julie Harris, Goldie Hawn, Liza Minnelli, Joan Collins, Jerry Seinfeld. You're also in the brand new Liza Minnelli documentary. I mean, I want to know when there's going to be a huge tribute to you, Miss Michelle Lee, because I want to be there.
Just take me to dinner. That's all you have to do. Just take me to dinner. I'd love that with you so much.
I would take you.
I became very Jewish.
I would take you to the early bird special so we can channel our grandparents. No, but really, like you have participated in so many magical evenings, television specials that honored all of these people. That could be one chapter of your book right there. My life honoring other people.
I love
You
that.
could call it In the Presence of Greatness.
That's right. And thank you, everybody, for that. You're now in the presence of greatness.
Well, let me tell you, for the people that have had the honor to see you on stage, your nightclub act, 54 Below, you're one of the Hollywood stars that's actually out there that performs, that does cabaret, that does nightclubs, that does concerts. I have to tell you, it's been such an immense honor and pleasure meeting you and having this chance to celebrate your monumental career. Thank you for all the great performances, all the joy you've brought to the world over the years. And most of all, Michelle, thank you so much for taking the time to appear on our show.
I had so much fun. And I know you did too.
Did I ever? And when that book comes out, I'm going to beg you to come back.
I'll come back anytime. Anytime. It was a joy. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Our guest has been the legendary Michelle Lee. For more information about Miss Lee, please visit her official website, michellelee.com. You can also follow her on Facebook and Instagram. Don't forget to tune into her podcast, We're Not Done Yet, co-starring Joan Van Ark and Donna Mills, which is available on every major streaming platform. My name is Harvey Brownstone. Thank you all for joining us. See you next time. Thank you to my producer, Steve Silver, my managers, Rick Marcelli and Robin Bragg Marcelli of the Marcelli Company in Hollywood, my director of programming, Robert Monaghan, my editor, Isaiah Charalampadis, and my entire team at the XPTV One Network in the UK.
Thanks for watching. Be sure to check out all the great interviews on the Harvey Brownstone Interviews YouTube channel. Don't forget to subscribe and ring the bell to be notified when new videos are posted.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.